Here at Paddy Power, we're the home of the Money Back Special, with some incredible offers every single week. Check out the website or app today. Terms and conditions apply. 18+ begambleaware.org.
Hi there, welcome along. Thanks for joining us. It's the Racing Post Football Postcast. I'm Bruce Millington, and completing the panel this week are reunited for the first time on the Postcast in ages, our two top judges, Mark Langdon and Dan Childs from the Racing Post. Great to have those back in tandem. Also great to have Brian McDonald from Paddy Power. There's a real North London tinge to it today because Dan and Mark are both Tottenham fans. And Brian is an Arsenal fan. If you're a regular Postcast listener, thanks as ever for your support. It's much appreciated. We love your comments, your retweets. Let us know at the bottom of the stream who you fancy. And if you're new to the Postcast, here's what we're all about. Basically, Dan, Mark and Brian weren't particularly fantastic footballers, but they are professional football analysts. They're very lucky in that they get to spend their weeks watching football, poring through stats, keeping their ear to the ground. But because it's their job, they've got to be very good at it. So what you get out of that is a distillation of all their hard work and wisdom. They won't be tipping the winner of every game. So do please, as ever, bet safely, responsibly and in a fun way. But hopefully by the end of the show, you'll go into another great weekend of Premier League action armed with the best knowledge to give yourself a decent chance of winning. Before we go through the games, we'll have a quick chat. I've got a couple of questions for the boys. The first one, and I'll start with you, Mark. Unfortunately, you know, crowds and football aren't an item at the moment, and that looks like being the case for the foreseeable future. Has matches being played behind closed doors become something that you factor in, and to what extent do you, or do you just basically ignore it and just say, well, from what you've found, football is football, and you crack on as normal?
I think mainly football is football. I mean, we in the big kickoff sort of supplement that we did just before the season started, a lot of analysis of results behind closed doors. I mean, you know, we're getting more and more data all the time on it. It's probably still not enough, but home advantage held up, not in the Bundesliga, which was the point that sort of loads of people made, particularly because that was the first league back. But virtually every other league, home advantage has held up, you know, around about, you know, what you'd expect. Where I do think that it's maybe different now, and I know that Dan tipped against Millwall last week, and maybe that was one of the reasons why, but I think there are certain teams that maybe rely on that crowd a little bit more than others. So you might want to be, say, more wary of a team like Millwall, where traditionally and notoriously, you know, it can be a horrible place for visiting teams to go. Not quite so difficult if there's nobody there. And I think over a sustained period of time, somebody like that might find their home advantage diminished slightly. And you've got to factor that in. But generally speaking, I tended to kind of just stick to the fact that home advantage is roughly worth the same as before.
Dan, is that broadly in line with your thinking, or do you put slightly greater emphasis on the fact that the terraces are empty?
I put a little bit of a greater emphasis on it. And as Mark's mentioned, there's certain teams that do rely a lot on that home advantage. So I do look to get with the away side in those circumstances. It's not just the fact how it impacts on the players, it's the refereeing decisions as well. You've got an intimidating ground. Often a referee with a 50-50 call will decide, you know, to go with a home side, and that can have a massive impact on the game.
Excellent. Thank you, gents. And the other question I've got for you, the season is not even a week old. What would you say you've learnt or suspect now that you didn't know a week ago? Dan, anything you've copped onto?
I don't know about generally, really. I mean, I tend to just look at every...
Any,
you know,
specific
game.
Team, though, that you thought, blimey, I didn't expect
well,
that.
Well, I mean, Spurs are the team that I support. And I mean, I was absolutely demoralised by the way that they played against... Everton. There's other teams. I'd say in the Championship, you've got to look at teams like Bournemouth and Watford, who have got a lot of players that are still being linked with top clubs. And if you look at their performances, although they've won the first two games, I would say don't get carried away with Bournemouth and Watford, because they look a little bit disjointed at the moment. Watford, you know, worked really hard to beat Middlesbrough, but lots and lots, 17 players were unavailable. I mean, some will have been injured. A lot of them, I think, are just waiting for a move away. And Bournemouth against Blackburn, although they won the game 3-2, Blackburn, it sounded like, had a lot of the game. And when the scores were level at 1-1 and 2-2, looked more likely to win it. So just be wary of teams that have got players that have been linked with other clubs. Until October, it could take a while before their squad settled down.
I wish we'd recorded this yesterday. I smashed into Bournemouth last night. I thought 10-1 was big for the Championship. Mark, anything that's grabbed you in the opening skirmishes?
I did just focusing more maybe on, because we all, when a favourite loses, we tend to sort of kind of focus on them. But Everton, the difference in performance in 2 months, they went to White Hart Lane in July and then back there in September. The difference was just incredible, and I felt that that midfield now, it was a big area of concern. Like, you know, Tom Davis started off okay for them, but I mean, they've gone really backwards. I mean, if you put him up for sale in the Championship, I don't think there'd be that many takers, just because he's a homegrown player. He kind of, you know, gets more and more starts. Sigurdsson been horrendous for a while, so that central midfield area just needed improving. And in Decore and Alan, they've definitely done that. Alan fell out of favour a bit with Gattuso at Napoli, but was one of the best midfielders in Italy before that. And I mean, James, whether he sustains it for the whole season, you can't be sure. But his touch and vision just added a new dimension to Everton's play. Tottenham couldn't get near them. And that's kind of, you know, James and Richarlison not out wide with Calvert-Lewin through the middle. I don't think Everton can get top six necessarily, but they should be a lot closer to it this time around. Maybe have a look at them in one of the cups.
Excellent. And what about you, Brian? What's caught your eye?
I think what I've seen is just a bit of an overreaction to sort of results after the first game week. If you look at Arsenal, they were about 50-1 before a couple of weeks ago, before they kicked off against Fulham. Last week, they were 30-1 for the title with us. They beat Fulham convincingly. You know, Fulham are one of the weaker sides in the league this division. All of a sudden, everyone is back in Arsenal. They're in it. They're short as 19-1. And you look at outside Arsenal as well. Leeds put in a decent performance at Liverpool. They're now shorter to win the league with us than Tottenham are after they had a poor defeat against Tottenham. So one game in, I think there is overreactions to just one result.
OK, yeah, before we get onto the games, and just very quickly, Brian, take us through Paddy Power's latest title betting.
Yeah, we have Man City favourites 8-11, Liverpool are 15-8, Chelsea 9-1, Man United 14-1, Arsenal 19-1, and 90-1 bar those five.
Okay, right, let's get cracking on Saturday's games. Four of them. I mean, the list of benefits of coronavirus is extraordinarily short for very obvious reasons. One small mercy is that all these Premier League games for the time being are live, which is fantastic news. Particularly if you're a marriage guidance counsellor. The first of them is 12:30 on Saturday. It's Everton, who we've just talked about, against West Bromwich Albion. And an interesting thing about the Saturday games, you've got Everton at home to West Brom, you've got Leeds at home to Fulham, you've got Man United at home to Palace, and you've got Arsenal at home to West Ham. So this is going to be the first leg of what is bound to be a very popular treble. Brian, I guess that's something you'll have on your radar as Saturday progresses. How do you bet on Everton?
Yeah, Everton, the first favourites, 1-2. The draw is 16-5, and West Brom are 5-1.
OK, Dan, you can have first crack this week. Are you going to go with the resurgent Toffees?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you're wary of one-match form, but having watched that game, I really do think they're going to have an excellent season, Everton. And I mean, they're quite short to win the game, so I would just bump up the price and I would go for Everton to win an under 3.5 goals, which you can get odds against. One thing about Everton, that the midfield, as Mark's mentioned, has been massively improved, and that defence is getting protected a lot better now. Doucouré gets through a mountain of work. Alan wins a lot of tackles as well. Spurs had very, very few good sights of goal. I mean, despite the likes of Harry Kane and Heung-min Son playing. So I think that's going to be a big area of improvement. Everton will keep a lot more clean sheets. Offensively, I don't see him scoring bucket loads of goals. I mean, they've not made... James is going to make a difference creative-wise, but up front, I'm still not sure they've got a forward there that's going to score you 20 goals a season. So a really strong season for Everton. But in this game, they're not going to need to score, you know, probably one, two goals will be enough to win the game. West Brom against Leicester. It's a game, really, that where they had a chance to do something. Leicester had Maddison was only fit enough to be on the bench. Johnny Evans, who played every game last season, was suspended, but they never really looked like taking advantage. There's a big issue, I think, up front for West Brom. You've got no quality centre-forward there. You've got Charlie Austin and Hal Robson-Kanu, who didn't score lots of goals in the Championship last season. They went without a recognised centre-forward, actually, in the starting line. I think Callum Robinson normally play as a centre-forward. They look toothless up front. I think this will be the case again here. Everton to win an under 3.5 goals.
What's your view of this one, Mark?
I've got exactly the same tip and the same reasons as well. I mean, I'm really surprised that West Brom haven't tried to make more sort of signings in terms of strikers, because I'm struggling to see how Robson-Kanu or Austin get to 10 goals this season. At least we'll say Fulham, you could look at them and say, well, Mitrovic could do that. The Leeds have obviously, you know, come up and spent quite a lot of money on Rodrigo. But even teams around them that you maybe thought would be near them at the bottom, so Watkins going to Villa and Callum Wilson going to Newcastle, look at West Brom and just think, well, who's going to do that for them? So that's for that reason, really, I'm going Everton to win an under 3.5 goals. I only have one shot on target at home to a Leicester team that I thought was there for the taking, really, and they didn't.
It's almost as if there's been a new rule introduced that no one realised, that one of West Brom and Norwich have to be in the Championship and the Premier League every season. They've just got to keep swapping over. Brian, is it 3 votes for Everton?
Absolutely, yeah. Just echo what the guy said there. Basically, the midfield of Everton really improved. Watched them against Spurs last week. Decore had a real physical presence in there. Alan, he did the simple things right. Pressed the opposition well. He won the second ball every time, it seemed, as well. And when you look at West Brom, you know, they made the loan signings of Pereira and Diagana permanent deals. Good signings, those. But Bilic said before the game against Leicester last week as well, he does need 3 or 4 more players in there. If they don't get them, I think they are in real trouble. Callum Robinson up top, Mark talked about there. He'll put in a solid shift. He'll work hard, but he's not going to get you 15, 20 goals to keep you in the division. I looked at a back four against Leicester. Darrow, Shea, Kyle Bartley, Kieran Gibbs were all there. I don't think they're Premier League quality players. So I am going to go with an Everton win. I'm going to go slightly different than the guys. I'm going to go with them on the -1 handicap at 6-4. Now, if you did place this bet on Everton last season, you'd only have 2 winners from 38 games. But I wouldn't let that get in the way of backing them this time. I think they're just going on a different trajectory than West Brom, and they should be strong enough to win by more than a single goal.
Okay, and for that bet to cop, if you're unfamiliar with handicap betting, they have to win by more than one goal. Now, Mark, can you explain something to me, please? After Leeds beat Liverpool last week and I saw the media reaction to it, I looked at the league table and they had no points. I don't get it. It's very strange. They entertain Fulham at Elland Road on Saturday. And I guess it's very lopsided, the market. We'll get Brian's latest quote from Paddy Power, but first of all, your view of this game.
Yeah, there was a strong reaction to it. I mean, some of it was justified, because I think people were really excited by, you know, what Bielsa could do, and, you know, they've gone to the champions, have scored 3 goals, a dramatic game, albeit they ended up on the wrong side of it. But Leeds didn't overly surprise me in them being sort of competitive at Anfield. You know, they're a good team. I think they'll be, you know, around sort of top half on the end of the season. And Fulham are not going to be. And I think that Fulham and West Brom would be my sort of two definites to go down, if you like. And that's not really pushing the boat out, given the odds that they are. But I mean, it's going to be difficult for both of those teams. Fulham played quite well at Elland Road last season in the Championship, but still lost. Bielsa was full of praise for them after that game. But I do see these two teams heading in sort of different directions in the Premier League. I'm going to the same bet, actually, is what I did with the Everton one. Leeds to win an under 3.5 goals. Now, there's no Salah to kind of cause the problems that he did for Leeds' back four and in the Championship. last season, they were outstanding. And I know that Ben White's departed, but I still think it's more about the structure of Leeds defensively. And if you have a look at their XG, though, Leeds, they didn't actually create a bundle of chances at Anfield. They were very clinical, something that they were often accused of not being in the Championship. So I'm not expecting sort of these crazy 4-3s every week, despite Bielsa's reputation. They are a very solid team, usually.
Okay, that's the one and only time this season that Patrick Bamford will be described as clinical. Brian, latest betting and your thoughts.
Leeds are 4-7. The draw is 11-4 and Fulham are 9-2. I agree with Mark. I think Leeds are going to win this. They're a bit short for me. They're probably okay to throw in a last man standing competition and get one of the teams in the bottom half out of the way. I think, yeah, as Mark said, they're definitely going to be okay. They should be closer to a top half finish than a relegation battle. It took Bielsa obviously two campaigns to get them out of the Championship, but it's going to nearly be easier for him this time around. You know, the Championship is a grueling 46 games, and we know how obsessed Bielsa is in the preparation and studying of the opposition. He'll have even more time to do that this season. Some of the players they have there, you know, they showed they weren't fazed by the big occasion at Anfield last week. Klitsch, Harrison, Eiling, Hernandez all gave a really good showing. Bamford, I'm not convinced he's the man to be a Premier League regular. Bielsa seems to love him anyway. It might take a couple of weeks for him to bring Rodrigo in. And when I look at Fulham, they have a proven goal scorer in Mitrovic, but bar him, I think they have a squad of half-decent players. I don't think there's enough quality all around to keep them in the division. They didn't trouble Arsenal at all last week, and it's sort of the same sort of story as when they were here last time out. Leeds won this 3-0 back in June. They kept a clean sheet. They have a clean sheet in their last seven home wins as well. So I can see where Mark's coming from. To win an under 3.5 is probably a good angle. But another interesting one I like looking at here is the booking markets. In both of these games last season, they were feisty affairs. There was 5 yellows and a red card in one of the games. And in the reverse fixture, there was 6 yellows. So if you're looking at 4-plus cards, so at least 4 yellow cards in the game is odds against around the 11-10 mark, could be an interesting one to have a look at.
Thank you, Brian. Dan, would you rather back Leeds at 4-7 or Everton at 2s on?
Everton at 2s on. I actually think Leeds are too short here. I'm going to go for Fulham or draw, double chance, odds against. There was a gap between the teams last season, but it was 12 points over 46 games. I mean, that's not a huge gap. That Fulham beat Leeds 2-1 at Craven Cottage. They lost 3-0 at Elland Road. I mean, as Mark's mentioned, I watched that game, and it was never a 3-0 game. Fulham actually won the shot count at 11-9 and were well in the game until Leeds got the second goal. I'm not totally convinced about Leeds being a top half side. I think the squad needs to be improved. They played the second string against Hull in the EFL Cup and lost on penalties. And to be honest, they were very lucky to even get to penalties. They scored with one of their the first attacks of the game, which was in injury time, and scrambled the draw and then lost the penalty shootout. I think that squad is going to need beefing up, because if they get injuries, they could have problems. They are going to need to be more clinical this season, because if the defence, without Ben White now, gives up the chances like they did against Liverpool. I mean, they conceded 4 goals. Liverpool actually had a lot of chances to get others as well. So I'm not totally sold on Leeds. They play some great football. They press high, which I think sometimes, it means that they go off a bit shorter in markets than they should. As you've mentioned, Bruce, they weren't very clinical last season. If that carries on, they could be a bottom half team.
Thank you, gentlemen. At 5:30 on Sky Sports, Man United versus Palace. And as a Palace fan, I was very excited to read a headline today saying that United have got as many as 11 players out. But then when I waded through the story and skipped through about 3 million adverts that interspersed every single sentence, I realised that it was pretty much the Man United reserve team that's struggling. But you never know. Hope springs eternal. Brian, how do Paddy Power bet on Man United Palace?
Man United are 2-7. The draw is 9-2 and Crystal Palace 8-1.
And Brian, have you got this down as a nailed on Man United cakewalk to start their campaign?
I don't at all, no. I don't like backing Man United at the price they are there. I think Palace are worth the stab at double chance or plus one. I remember towards the back end of last season, United really started to shorten up in the betting after the restart. They were beating teams they were expected to beat, but the performances weren't as good. You remember the Villa game away from home, they got a dubious penalty. Then they really started shortening up in the betting. They played Southampton and West Ham at home in the last couple of games where they were playing for wins in the race for the top four, but they only managed draws and they actually conceded. If you look at the XG stats there, they conceded more than they scored in those games. So I spoke when I was on the podcast a couple of months ago or towards the end of last season that I thought Solskjaer could have considered himself to be sort of fortunate that the board went and got Bruno and he came in and had the impact that he did. It was sort of a second honeymoon phase for Ole. I'm not convinced he's the right man to take Manchester United back to being title challengers. Definitely have quality in their squad, but I think 2 years in now, there's still questions over whether he can lead them back to the top. So I think at the prices, Palace double chance, it's a fine play. I was expecting Southampton to beat them last week, but they were full value for their win. They have a real threat on both wings now. Eze and Zaha, if they start together at the weekend, they can cause real problems for Man United on the counter-attack. So I'd be wary of putting Man United in at such a short price.
Good man, Brian. Dan Childs, how do you view this fixture?
I think United will win, but I don't think there'll be lots of goals. So I'm going to go Manchester United and under 3.5 goals at evens, I believe the price is. United did improve, particularly after Bruno Fernandes came in. I mean, they've had no loss now in 14 Premier League games. That is an excellent run. But what I would say is they don't score lots of goals. They were the fifth highest scorers last season, despite finishing third. And Palace, as we know, are usually a very well-organised side. I mean, Hodgson had quite a few defenders missing for the first game against Southampton, but still the organisation was there. They've actually, although Southampton had a lot, the lion's share of the possession, Palace, I think, carried the greater threat, probably deserved to win the game. They'll carry a counter-attacking threat against Manchester United as well, but I think it'll be more difficult to score here. So I'll go Manchester United to win and under 3.5 goals.
And Lango.
Yeah, I was going to go for Manchester United to win to nil, purely on the basis that, I mean, Crystal Palace have had some remarkable away results, including wins at Old Trafford and the Etihad. And, they've down the years have traditionally given Liverpool a few problems, although not last season. But then if you have a look at sort of most of their defeats, actually, it tells a slightly different story. They had 9 away defeats last season and they failed to score in 8 of those. And I think what happens is Palace, if they score first, then that's the perfect situation for a team like them. If they fall behind, it's difficult for them to then kind of change their ways and chase a match. That's what I think those stats suggest. So I was going to go for United to win to nil, but I do agree with Brian that in terms of sort of your ackers, I think you can sort of quite easily leave United out of this one.
Okay, and at 8 o'clock, it's the, what should we call it? The naggy, annoyed, unhappy fans derby. It's Arsenal versus West Ham, two London clubs with their local TV channels where there's always people spitting bile into the microphone and going on about the board should be sacked. But we're in an unusual position because while West Ham fans are doing their usual thing of being absolutely down on everything, including the board, the Arsenal fans are quite happy, Brian, aren't they?
Yeah, it's been a good week. It's been a good couple of months for Arsenal, I suppose. We've continued on from winning the FA Cup with the Community Shield, and we've started well against Fulham last week. You can't really look into that performance too much on the outlook for the season. There's still a lot of question marks over our squad. Who's going to be there? Who's not going to be there at the end of the transfer window? I think I was counting the players that were missing against Fulham last week, and I think we've a squad of well over 30 senior players there, a lot of dead wood in the team. So it's going to be a much different Arsenal at the end of the season to what we're starting with. But the new players...
if you get 20 million for Martinez, you're doing something right, aren't you? I mean, blooming heck, that was extraordinary, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. He came in and he did his job well. It's some fans think that he should have been our number one ahead of Leno. I think he's better with the ball at his feet and working out from the back. But Leno was obviously the shot stopper and the man on the big money. So we've done, as you said, very well to get 20 million in for him. Hopefully we can get a few more out the door and use that money to reinforce the midfield. But if you look at the players that already played last weekend, Gabriel, for such a young centre half, he had a big physical presence to him, which is what Arsenal have needed at the back. Willian was good as well, 3 assists. He drifted inside and found little sort of pockets of space in the dangerous areas, which Arsenal have actually been missing probably since Santi Cazorla left a couple of years ago. More so what Arteta's done than the personnel changes, though, I think, is he's created a really good team spirit at the club that hasn't been seen for years. The players are enjoying themselves. They want to win. They want to win for each other as well. And the players who don't fit that mould are out. So I think it will be a win for Arsenal at the weekend. They are a bit short as well. If I'm looking at West Ham, they weren't great against Newcastle last week, were they? And they've a horrible run of games now, really, after Arsenal. They have Wolves, Leicester, Tottenham, Man City and Liverpool. So it's hard to see them picking up too many points from those games. And already you could say after one game, David Moyes could be under some pressure. Arsenal too short at 1-2 maybe at home. So Aubameyang to score and Arsenal to win around the even money mark. And I said there, Willian had 3 assists last week. He's 9-5 to just get one this weekend. And you'd imagine he'll have enough chances at home to set up a couple of chances.
So Arsenal are twos on. What's the draw and what are West Ham?
The draw is 10-3 and West Ham are 9-2.
So Brian, just quickly, Arsenal 1-2 now. If Everton, Leeds and Manchester United all win, what does that 1-2 become?
Well, we'll have a huge running up money liability on that. We would shorten up, I'd say. It'll be closer to the threes on mark by kickoff.
Okay. Dan, I think there's a huge overreaction to this West Ham situation. I think everyone's far too down on them. I mean, the kid they sold to West Brom wasn't even there last season. You know, it's no big deal. I mean, honestly, isn't everyone just getting a little bit carried away? They finished last season really, really well. I just don't get I certainly don't get West Ham as relegation side. Where do you put them at the moment?
Yeah, I don't think they'll be relegated. But on the other hand, watching the game against Newcastle, and that's only one game, but they were so poor. I mean, the goal for Newcastle, you could kind of see it coming. And when Newcastle, I know they've brought in Callum Wilson, who's made a bit of a difference for them. But I think when Newcastle turn up at the London Stadium and look the better side and go on to win fairly comfortably, it is a little bit concerning. If you're a West Ham fan, and I think go to Arsenal, and then after that, I'd struggle to see them getting anything. The thing with Arsenal now, although a lot of the defenders are the same, and they've got Gabriel in, but it's similar to Everton in that they just look a lot more organised now, and that defence is getting far better protected. They look like they're going to keep clean sheets now. I know Fulham, they're going to have a lot tougher teams than Fulham to face this season. But I look at just the way they looked organised in the Community Shield, going back a little bit further in the FA Cup semi-final against Manchester City, in the final against Chelsea. They just look a team now that is really working for each other. Don't think they're going to give any silly goals away. And given how lifeless West Ham were against Newcastle, I don't see them scoring here. So I would back Arsenal to win 2-0 to bump the price up 17-10.
OK, and Mark, what's your best bet here?
Arsenal -1. I mean, it's true that West Ham did finish last season, you know, relatively strongly. But if you have a look at those fixtures, I mean, Norwich would have just given up. Watford looked like they'd given up. Pearson was sacked immediately after that game. They drew 1-1 against Aston Villa, and a good point away at Manchester United. But I would have expected them, given the state of some of those other teams, to have picked up the results. I don't think they'll be relegated, but as Brian's mentioned, the run of fixtures coming up is absolutely horrendous. And when people say, oh, yeah, but it'll be just like West Ham to go and get a big result somewhere, when they lost 8 of their 10 away games against teams that finished in the bottom half last season. So I'm not sure. I mean, it was Chelsea where they managed to really, did the double over Chelsea. But I'm not sure about this reputation as kind of a giant sort of slayer exists, really. They were the fullbacks, Fredericks and Cresswell, don't think they're good enough. And Declan Rice is his second coming, according to the West Ham fans. He was useless against Newcastle. His touch was all over the place. He wasn't putting any passes through. And even Antonio, definitely perked them up when he moved to the centre forward position. didn't have much service, but he wasn't putting himself about quite like he was at the end of last season either, really. And I agree with what's been said about Arsenal. You know, this is a team that beat Man City, Chelsea and Liverpool towards the end of last season. I think they'll make a really good run at the top four this time around. You know, United may be the most vulnerable there. Arsenal definitely on the up.
OK, Brian, before we move on to Sunday's games, just take us through Paddy Power's latest relegation betting.
Yeah, Fulham are the favourites at 8-11. West Brom are 5-6. Villa 6-4. West Ham then 23-10. Burnley 5-2. Palace 11-4. Sheffield United 3-1. Brighton 7-2. Newcastle 4-1. And then Leeds 9-2.
All I want from each of you is the name of the three clubs that is going down. No reasoning, just the names. Mark Langdon.
Fulham, West Brom, Aston Villa.
Dan Childs.
I'm going to go West Brom, Fulham, and I'm going to throw a shot one in Sheffield United.
Ooh, and Brian.
Fulham, West Brom and Burnley.
Thank you, gents. Let's do Sunday next.
Friends, or maybe more, earn a 20 quid free bet for every friend you refer to Paddy Power thanks to our Friends with Benefits programme. Log in to your Paddy Power account and share your referral link to get started. Terms and conditions apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
Welcome back to the Racing Post Weekend Football Postcast. It's Bruce Millington, Dan Childs, Mark Langdon and Paddy Power's Brian McDonnell. Let's look ahead to the four games in the Premier League on Sunday. They are all live on TV. The first at 12 o'clock, Southampton versus Tottenham. We're not doing they played for both clubs because we've got so much to get through this week. And this wouldn't have been the game because we would have been here all night. Southampton and Tottenham both opened up with disappointing 1-0 defeats. So an intriguing tussle down at St Mary's. Let's get the betting from Brian McDonnell.
Southampton are 11-5, the draw 9-4, and Tottenham are 5-4.
What do we make of this one, Lango?
I mean, I'm a big fan of Southampton and disappointed again when they were maybe expected more of against Crystal Palace. And then the cup wasn't great either in midweek. But a good time to be playing Tottenham before the new signings look like they're going to be in the club or certainly able to play. They will have been to Bulgaria on Thursday night. Then this game is the early game on the Sunday. Quick turnaround. They were really poor against Everton last week. And Southampton had Tottenham's measure, I felt, last year. Even though Spurs beat them in the FA Cup, Southampton were the better team in both FA Cup ties. And they beat them at St Mary's in the game where Harry Kane got injured as well. So I think it's a brave old punter that backs Spurs at the moment. At those prices, given the quick turnaround.
Just a quick word on Gareth Bale, assuming that happens. Will that be massively beneficial to Tottenham?
I think it'll give them a really big boost. Yeah, I'm not convinced that he's this sort of has-been and totally finished. I mean, he's somebody that lost interest at Real Madrid, but that might have been because of the way he'd been treated. I still feel like he puts up good performances for Wales. I mean, he's won, what, four Champions Leagues? He'd still be one of the best players in Tottenham's team.
OK, Brian, Southampton, Tottenham, where's the best bet here?
Yeah, I'm going with Mark. I'm going with Southampton to win at the prices. I think the value is with them, especially considering Tottenham are over in Bulgaria this evening in a Europa League qualifier, and they're going to have to play close enough to a full strength team. Jose has already said that Harry Kane will be playing. It's a game that they can't afford to lose tonight to get into the Europa League. So with the preparation and the travelling going into that game, I think there could be tired legs from players who aren't up to full match fitness yet. Kane, I watched him in England's Nations League games earlier in the month. He was tired then, so I don't think he's 100% match fit. If you look at the performance against Everton last week, it wasn't great either. I think especially at the back, Matt Doherty, as good as he was getting forward in that sort of back five system that Wolves played, he's definitely more vulnerable at the back in the right back position. He's not really the system Jose has. He's not an attacking wing back anymore. Alderweireld, I thought he looked quite slow as well. Eric Dyer, he was beaten easily by Calvert-Lewin for the goal, and Davies, a left-back, struggled against Richarlison. So question marks over Tottenham at the back, I think. Southampton, I'm disappointed that they lost last week. I agree with Mark. I think they've showed enough last season. If you look since January, I think they were the fourth best team in the league from January onwards. Going forward, they have Ward-Prowse, Redmond, Ings, Che Adams found a bit of form towards the end of the season. So I'm not too worried about them yet after last week's defeat. And I think they're good value for the win this weekend.
And Charlesy, what do you make of this one?
I was initially going to go with Southampton. And then I watched the highlights of their game last night against Brentford, where they made one change, Southampton. So they obviously want to have a real go at the EFL Cup, and they've lost the game 2-0 and didn't look like they created a lot of chances as well. And so I think there's issues there. I'm going to go with a draw, actually, now. I've changed my opinion.
But we haven't had a draw yet this season, have we?
I think, don't think we have yet. No, not as yet. But I just think, I mean, Spurs, as I mentioned earlier, were poor against Everton. Part of that was Spurs being poor. Part of it is that Everton, I think, are going to be a lot better this season than they were last. I think as the games go by, some of the Spurs players might get a little bit more match fitness and might improve slightly. But as Mark said, they're not a team you could back with any confidence at the moment. But you could say the same about Southampton, who against Crystal Palace, as I mentioned, had a lot of possession. Palace looked the more dangerous side and I think deservedly won the game. And then they've lost, as I say, 2-0 at home to Brentford in the Cup. So I don't think everything's, you know, necessarily right for Southampton as well. Draw for me.
Thank you very much, chaps. Let's move on to the 2 o'clock game. It's on Sky. It's Newcastle versus Brighton. Brian, what's the latest from Paddy Power here?
Newcastle 6-4 favourites, the draw 2-1, and Brighton are 15-8.
This is a tricky one, Dan.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a draw in this one. I think it looks a Newcastle, you know, did play well at West Ham. I thought deserved to win. Callum Wilson's going to make a big difference for them. His pace and his movement gives them another dimension up front. Andy Carroll, for once, looks fit as well. So that just gives them a completely new look attack, really. I think Brighton, although they lost to Chelsea 3-1, actually, you know, played some good stuff in that game. And they've got a very good away record as well. They're 7 undefeated away from home. 5 of those matches have been draws, though, and I think this could be a draw at Newcastle.
I'll tell you one thing we can definitely say about Brighton, Mark. They have got the worst kit. I mean, no kit, right? There's two things a kit shouldn't have. It's a buttons and a collar, and theirs has got both, but it's got little bits of black on it and yellow. It's absolutely hideous. It's the worst kit, but that doesn't really matter about betting. Where is the value in Newcastle Brighton?
Well, this is a really interesting game because market tends to hate Newcastle and is has them much worse than sort of their league position, and probably the opposite with Brighton. I understand why, because Newcastle really did struggle on expected goals last year, and Brighton do play some really progressive football, but it does look reflected in the betting to me. So I was going to go for Newcastle draw, no bet in this game. I mean, for all the negativity that and around Newcastle, just in terms of their football last season, you have a look at the teams that won at St James's Park, and Liverpool, Leicester, Tottenham, Arsenal and Everton, they didn't lose a game to a team below them in the table. And Brighton do play really nice football, and they did play nice football against Chelsea, and they still lost. And I just don't think they win enough games for them to get the respect that they do in the market. Maybe that it will turn around. I just find them a really difficult team to actually back, because they are ahead of the game, I suppose, in terms of the fact that the market rates them much better than the league table. And I think teams like that are quite difficult to actually then back, because, you know, the market's fully appreciative of the quality that they've got.
OK. And Brian, what's your verdict on this one?
I agree with Dan. I'm going to go with the draw at the bigger of the three prices at 2-1. Both of these games last season between the two sides finished 0-0, and only once in the last six meetings between the teams has there been more than one goal. So you were saying it's a good thing that we can get to watch all 10 live games. But if you're not going to watch one this weekend, if your missus wants you for 2 hours over the weekend, 2 p.m. on Sunday, I'd say you can be excused for missing this one. I think I watched Brighton against Chelsea Monday night. They were unfortunate not to get anything out of the game. They created more, if you look at the XG stats, slightly more than Chelsea. The goals they conceded, a penalty, a wonder goal, and there was a deflection as well for Zouma. So on another day, they could have got a better result. I like Graham Potter, the style of play as well. Very brave to play such a high line at the back against Chelsea and Timo Werner especially. But they didn't really give him a sniff. Connolly and Mopé, two good strikers up top who can run you ragged and give defences a torrid time.
And that left-back's a player. The right-back's a player, isn't he? Lamptey.
Lamptey, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was surprised after seeing him that Chelsea were happy to let him go. He looked very, very good. Really good attacking threat on the right side. Newcastle, a couple of decent signings there considering their budget. You know, they had one of the lowest sort of figures for shots on goal and shots on target across Europe's top five leagues last season. They brought in Callum Wilson, Ryan Fraser, Jeff Hendrick as well. They've all had immediate impacts. They've all scored already this season. I like Steve Bruce. I think he's done a good job there considering the constraints he's been working under. But I do worry if over a full season they will have enough firepower to convert chances. So all in all, I'm going for a drab game. Draw, the bigger of the three prices, is fine for me.
OK, Brian calls Newcastle v Brighton the most missable game of the weekend. But next up is the least missable. 4:30, Chelsea v Liverpool, the first of the battles of the big guns that will define the outcome of the title race. Really, really looking forward to this. You should be an absolute cracker. And Brian, how do Paddy Power bet?
We have Chelsea at 21-10. The draw is 13-5 and Liverpool are 11-10.
OK, Mark, take it away for the game of the weekend. Who do you like?
I think I prefer Chelsea draw no bet at the prices. I wouldn't be amazed if it was a draw. I think this early on in the season, if it was a draw with 15, 20 minutes to go, would there be that urgency to sort of, you know, really sort of, you know, gamble and try and get the win? I'm not sure that will be there. If they come away with a point each, it wouldn't be start to the campaign. But I suppose it comes down to the fact of what you think Chelsea have sort of got in the locker this season. They weren't very good against Brighton, but it was the first game of the season. I think they should be a lot better this time around, you know, with Havertz and with Timo Werner. I saw Thiago Silva was back in training as well. We're speaking before the press conference, but they were hopeful as well that Chilwell could come back. So I think that would improve Chelsea, you know, defensively in midfield and up front. So I think that Chelsea are going to get a lot closer than Liverpool this year. Not enough to win the league, but you know, if I've got that feeling that they can finish third in the Premier League, and I think that they will, I've probably got to be with them, I think, at the prices against the Liverpool team that needs to sharpen up a little bit defensively for sure.
Absolutely. Chelsea draw no bet for Mark. Who for Brian?
I'm sitting on the fence. I'm going to just have a look at the goal line. I think there could be goals. So maybe over 3.5 goals is 7-5 with us. Both the teams were involved in the only games last week in which both teams scored. Liverpool weren't at their best against Leeds. There was lots of individual mistakes. Players weren't playing as disciplined as they were for the majority of last season. Alexander-Arnold, he was beaten all ends up for Harrison's goal. Van Dijk got one himself, but he was sloppy in letting Bamford get his goal. And I thought Firmino and Mane made the wrong decisions at times in terms of, you know, pulling the ball back or taking shots on. So if they do have individual performances like that again this week, and if all 11 players aren't at it, they could be vulnerable. Chelsea, I think, will be good for goals as well. Obviously, they brought Werner in. He's a goal machine. You could see his pace against Brighton. He's going to terrorise defences all season. Kai Havertz came in for his debut. Didn't have the best games, but obviously some players need a bit of time to adapt to the league. But as good as they are going forward, Chelsea, still question marks over their defence. I think between Kepa in goals, Zouma and Christensen, centre-back partnership during the week, I think they can be got at. I don't think Thiago Silva is ready to come in yet this weekend. So both teams, as good as they are going forward, haven't looked too assured at the back. There was 8 goals in between these teams when they played towards the end of last season. So if we can get just half of them, that's over 3.5 goals. We'll click at 7-5. If you want to have a look at a goal scorer as well, he's the obvious choice. But Werner at 9-2 is bigger price than Salah. So I think the value is with him.
OK, thank you very much, Brian. Dan, what's your verdict on this?
It should be an excellent game. I'm going to go with a draw. I think it looks overpriced there at 13-5. I understand, you know, the inflated price is partly because both teams have got so much going forward and there's an expectation, high expectation of goals. I just feel there'd be a lot of respect between the two sides. I agree with Mark that if the game gets to 20 minutes to go and it's level, I don't think either side would be too upset to take a point away from the game. I don't think either team looks quite right yet. Chelsea, understandably, because of the new players coming in, it's going to take them a little while to settle down. And Liverpool, I just think in the Community Shield, they looked a little bit off it. And I thought against Leeds, they were very sloppy at times as well. I mean, the Van Dijk mistake was, you know, was horrific. But you can't imagine him, you know, his focus being as lax in a big game like Chelsea away. So I think Liverpool will be tighter, Chelsea will be tighter, and that all feeds into a bigger chance of a draw.
Thanks, gents. Finally, on Sunday at 7 p.m, it's Leicester versus Burnley, and it's on BBC One, so it will be the most watched game of the season so far. Brian, give us Paddy Power's latest betting on this one.
Leicester are 4-7, the draw is 11-4, and Burnley are 9-2.
Okay, so far, Dan Charles, 3 games on Sunday. He's tipped 3 draws. Are we having a draw Yankee on Sunday?
It's going to be a tight game, but it's not going to be a draw. So Leicester to win by 1 goal, I'm going for here at 23-10. Just think Leicester, it was a great result for them at West Brom. I mentioned the, you know, issues over Madison's fitness going into the game. He should be a bit further along now, you know, maybe even ready to start. Johnny Evans will be back into the defence. He played all 38 games for them last season. So that's him alongside Soyuncu, you know, gives them their first choice defence back. Stanier was excellent as well, I thought. Had a great game. Suggests that maybe they won't miss Chilwell quite as much as they thought. But Burnley are never an easy team to beat, are they? I mean, they've not lost by more than 1 goal in the last 8 Premier League games. Finished 10th last season after that strong finish to the season. Had the 7th best away record. So they're not going to go down there without a fight. But I just think Leicester will nick it.
Whenever I have a strong opinion about football that conflicts with one of Mark Langdon's, I always worry. I'm very keen on Leicester. Mark's very down on Leicester. So is that downness on the Foxes going to manifest itself in your tip for this game?
Yeah, I think, well, it's slightly. Yeah, I'm going to go for the draw, which would be a disappointing result for Leicester. I just don't think they were as good for sort of those two-thirds of that season as what other people felt. And their kind of collapse looked like it was coming. And maybe it was the injuries, but the numbers they were putting up just weren't that good. And, you know, Vardy went on one of these incredible hot streaks that he can do. But overall, I wasn't massively surprised when they tailed off. And I think this is a tricky and awkward game against Burnley because Burnley deny team space. And the one thing that Leicester sort of love it is space to play, whether that's sort of between the lines with Harvey Barnes or Madison's fit and sort of, you know, slipping in those passes to Vardy. Burnley just don't allow those gaps more often than not. Dan was mentioning about the fact they're difficult to beat. I mean, they've only lost 2 of their last 16 matches in the Premier League. I think as soon as Sean Dyche goes, you probably back them for relegation because look at the team, look at the squad. It doesn't really add up to too much, but he gets the absolute maximum out of them sort of all the time. And I think I'm always wary of backing against Burnley for that reason. And just very quickly on Leicester, another reason why I'm negative about them is the Europa League. I think they will give it a good old go. And last year they didn't have those extra games, which is a big thing for most teams. I mean, you can't, you know, prepare like you would if you had the free midweek.
Okay, and Brian, Leicester v Burnley. What's your view on this one?
Yeah, I agree with the guys. I think Leicester are too short in the match betting, so I'm looking at the goal line. I'm going with under 2.5 goals. I have to say, Burnley have slipped under my radar a bit. They haven't played last week. I think they're in Carabao action tonight, but I don't think they've had any signings that really stand out. They lost Jeff Hendrick to Newcastle, but we know how they're going to play no matter what players are on the pitch. It'll be the same plucky Burnley we see every year under Dyche. Leicester fell off sort of towards the end of last season with a couple of big injuries. Madison came on last week. Good to see him return, but under 2.5 goals, it's clicked in 3 of Leicester's 5 last home games, 7 of Burnley's last 8 games last season. If you take out the penalties Leicester got against West Brom last week, they didn't create a huge number of clear-cut chances either. So I think a close game under 2.5 goals is fine.
Lovely stuff. For the second week running, Sheffield United kick off at 6 p.m. on Monday, and we will do that game next.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Racing Post Football Postcast. 2 more Premier League games to get through, and then we'll see what else the lads fancy lower down the divisions and across Europe, and we'll get the naps. But first of all, let's look at the 6 p.m. game. On Monday, it's Aston Villa's seasonal reappearance. They're up against Sheffield United in what should be a fairly even contest as far as the betting is concerned, Brian.
It is, yeah. Aston Villa are 17-10, the draw 21-10, and Sheffield United are 17-10.
And we'll stick with you for the first selection.
I'm going to go with the bigger of the three prices, the draw, 21-10. I watched bits of Villa during the week against Burton. They were okay. A couple of goals late on. They had Ollie Watkins and Grealish playing. Watkins got a goal inside the 6-yard box, his sort of trademark finish. I'm not convinced, though, whether he's going to score, 15 to 20 goals this season that Villa are looking for. He was obviously very good for Brentford last season. He's a poacher, but he relies on the service of his midfielders to pick him out in the right spaces. Villa obviously have Jack Grealish, one of the best players in the league for chances created last season. But outside of him, and the fact that Villa will probably be likely on the back foot for most of the games this season, I'm not sure if Watkins is going to get the service he needs. Sheffield United, I thought they were poor last Monday against Wolves. False start, found themselves 2-0 down after 5 or 6 minutes, but they didn't create much for going forward after that. Dan said they could be considered relegation candidates, and I do worry for them as well, especially going forward. There's not enough quality up front there, I don't think, with McBurnie and Billy Sharp for the Premier League. I think they should be looking to use the last couple of weeks of the window to bring in a top striker. So I don't think this is going to be a classic game. I think it'll be a close one. The draw, biggest of the three prices, so happy to go with that.
Charlie, what's your selection?
I'm going to go with Aston Villa, sort of following on from my comments about Sheffield United earlier. I just think Sheffield United are a team. I'll explain why I'm so down on them. I think they rely a hell of a lot on playing an intensity, and I didn't really see that in the game against Wolves. I didn't see it so much since the lockdown as well, and I just think that the lack of crowds with them may just affect them a little bit more, possibly than other teams, even in away games. They just don't seem to be playing with that same intensity that they did for like the first 2/3 of last season. The players that they bring in, I mean, the budget that they've got isn't as high as a lot of Premier League teams. They're still shopping a lot of the time in the Championship. They brought in Jadon Bogle and Max Lowe, both from Derby. The players that are on the up, and Chris Wilder will be hoping that they do well, but they're not proven Premier League players. You look at Aston Villa, have also shopped in the Championship, but I do think Ollie Watkins is going to be a good signing for them. I think they just needed a striker with movement and finishing abilities to kind of profit from Grealish's creativity. Jack Grealish, I rate him so highly. I mean, it's none of the big clubs to tie up a deal for him. I find it amazing that every time I watch him, the guy looks sheer class. For me, he should be getting in the England team. I watched him, and that's only against Burton again in the week, but he ran the game absolutely outstanding. I think he could be the match winner here. The Villa win for me.
I couldn't agree more, Dan. Mark, are these clubs skin or stupid? How on earth is Jack Grealish still an Aston Villa player?
Well, I suppose it's a bit like the Zaha one at Palace, where he's worth so much to that particular team that he becomes just a little bit too expensive. Like, if you're talking, I mean, you're never quite sure what the figures are, but I mean, it's kind of suggested, wasn't it? It was around about 80 million that Aston Villa wanted for him. I mean, United got Van der Beek for half that. So, I mean, that's why, isn't it? I mean, you know, Arsenal were looking for a bit of creativity. They got Willian on a free. Chelsea were looking for that player. They got Kai Havertz for around about the same that Grealish costs. And, you know, in Germany, they would probably have Havertz as, you know, the absolute golden boy of German football. There is a premium price to pay because the selling club are rich. You know, it's not the same as in France or whatever, where you can maybe go to Lille and do a deal with them, and, you know, it feels like a bigger transfer. Aston Villa don't need the money, do they? We've seen that. Just spent 20 million on a goalkeeper they probably wouldn't have paid 2 million for 6 months ago. That's just the way it works, really. You know, the bottom half Premier League teams are nearly always, you know, got enough money to make the deal just too expensive.
Fair enough. I still can't hear Kai Havertz without thinking that they've bought Guy Havard, the Sky reporter. But that would be a bad buy. Anyway, what's going to happen, Mark? What's the bet here?
I did say Villa bottom three. It was more really on the basis that if Grealish got injured, then I'm not even sure. So you're not sure where their next point is coming from. So having that so much reliance on one player, I think is dangerous. But when he is there, the potential match winner. So I was looking at Villa draw no bet, and just to go on to Sheffield United, a point that hasn't been raised on this week's show anyway, I think the downgrading goalkeeper from Henderson to Ramsdale, and it cost them 18 million as well in the process, is a real big problem for Sheffield United. And that's not really an issue with Ramsdale, just that Henderson could well be England's goalkeeper, couldn't he, come the Euros? I mean, this probably might even be Manchester United's goalkeeper very soon. So that could be another problem for them.
Just quickly on the Man U goalkeeping situation, do you think Ollie will kind of feel obliged to give De Gea a chance and then drop him at his first rick?
No, I don't think so. I think Henderson should be in there.
But who will be?
I mean, Henderson played in the last friendly, didn't he, against Aston Villa. I mean, if you were betting on it and offering a market, I mean, you'd make De Gea a favourite. I suppose. So in terms of that question, I'd say De Gea, but I think it'd be a mistake. I think Henderson's ready.
Interesting situation, that, for sure. And interesting game to conclude match week 2 of the Premier League. 8:15 on Monday night, live on Sky Sports. Wolves v Man City should be an absolute cracker. Brian, how did Paddy Power bet on this?
Wolves are 5-1, the draw 10-3, and Man City are 1-2.
5-1 Wolverhampton Wanderers, Dan. Bring it on. What a price, eh?
I'm gonna go with Man City, but not the win price. I'm just gonna try and bump it up and say Man City and both teams to score at 2-1. Because I do fancy Wolves to get a goal. I know they've had the double over Manchester City last season, but I just think these runs are always gonna come to an end at some point, and Manchester City are going to look at those games, and they're generally pretty sharp, you know, when they come back from a break. I mean, after the lockdown, started off 3-0 win against Arsenal and a 5-0 win against Burnley. I mean, they do, although Wolves have coped with them well, I mean, they have scored over 100 goals in the league last season, so maybe this is the time that Wolves won't cope with them, and I'll take City to win an entertaining game. City to win and both teams to score.
Mark Langdon?
Yeah, I'd go for Wolves or draw double chance here. You should be able to find better 1-2 shots than Man City at Molineux, I would suggest. I mean, it wasn't only their trouble with Wolves last year. I mean, Man City against their fellow top seven, only won one away game against them. And they probably did dominate the XG in a lot of them. But, you know, they made the same mistakes over and over, even against Lyon in the Champions League. You couldn't ask for an easier Champions League quarter-final, really, than Lyon. And they've conceded 3 goals to them. And that was with Laporte back. So I think they need to bring in a centre half. I like Torres, the player from Valencia, and they've obviously got, you know, unbelievable talent in the likes of De Bruyne as well. But they just give up opportunities, too many for my liking, particularly at Tucson away from home against a team as tough, as awkward, and as talented as what Wolves are.
And what are you going to go for, Brian?
Yeah, different again. I'm going to go with City to win 2-0. I know Wolves looked very good against Sheffield United last week. Two early goals and the game was over. You know, they're very good at defending leads. They play compact, break quickly. But if they fall behind, I think they have found it tough to break teams down and be on the front foot. Seven of their last eight games had both teams to score now. So I think the first goal is crucial in the game. If City get it, I think it'll be tough for Wolves to get back into the game. Wolves play Stoke in the Cup tonight as well. They're going to have to play some first-team players there because they don't have the luxury of a very big squad. So disadvantage there. They'll have less days to prepare. City obviously haven't played yet either. But I think, you know, we all know the wealth of attacking talent and the quality they have all over the pitch. It's hard to see Wolves keeping them out. Wolves looked a bit shaky as well, I think, on set pieces last week against Sheffield United. So if you're looking at a goal scorer, I know Aymeric Laporte had the virus, but if he does start, if he's back, I think 13-1 anytime, could be worth a play, as he'll be looking to get on the end of a set piece.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you very much, gents, for your thoughts on the Premier League before we get the best bets of the weekend. Anything else you fancy in the EFL or indeed across Europe? Dan Childs.
Yeah, I've got two League Two bets that I like the look of. Carlisle at shade of odds on at home to Southend. Carlisle, I think they're going to do okay in League Two this season. They did start with a 3-0 loss at Cambridge, but if you look at the shot count of that game, it was 19-5 in Carlisle's favour, even though they lost 3-0. So they didn't play anywhere near as poorly as the scoreline suggests. I think now at home, the Southend, a very young Southend team with lots of injuries. They started with a 4-0 defeat at home to Harrogate. I think they're going to have a really tough season, Southend, unless they can, you know, sort some things out and get some new players in. Their squad, the average age of their squad for that game, it was 20 points something. I'm not sure exactly what, but it was the lowest average age squad Southend have ever put out. So big problems there. So Carlisle in that one. The other League Two game I like, Scunthorpe, draw no bet away to Crawley. Scunthorpe got a young side, but started with a nice solid 1-1 draw at home to Newport. It was a decent result. I think it'll be easier for them against Crawley. They started with a 2-0 defeat away to Port Vale. And they're going to struggle up front, I think, this season. They lost Bez Lubala and Ollie Palmer, who were the joint top scorers last season with 12 goals each.
OK, thank you. Dan, Mark, what have you got for us?
Not a huge amount in the EFL, really. I thought Norwich were fair enough against Preston. I'm not as sweet on Norwich, maybe, as what some others are in terms of their overall chances in the Championship this season. But should be up there challenging for promotion. And Preston weren't great, after lockdown last season. Their campaign just tailed off. Maybe a little bit unlucky to lose to Swansea last week, if you have a look at the stats, but it looked like a really poor game. And Neil's return to Norwich could be a disappointing one. That was about all I could find. Maybe goals in Blackpool versus Swindon. Swindon started last week well against Rochdale. Blackpool looked like they had a lot of chances and sort of created a lot at Plymouth without actually putting the ball in the back of the net. But I think they've signed quite well this year, so maybe either both teams to score or the overs there might be one to look at.
Okay, cheers, Mark. Yeah, I must admit, I agree. I can't work out why everyone is so forgiving towards Norwich for what was a pretty pathetic campaign. Brian, what have you got for us, my friend?
Yeah, I'm on the same lines as Dan. I have Carlisle written down as well at home to Southend. Dan was saying that Southend are going to have to bring in a couple of new players if they're going to improve, but they're in so much trouble off the field as well. I think just this morning I was reading they've just a couple of weeks left to pay £500,000 in debt before they're wound up. So they're in big trouble. I think Carlisle, shade of odds on, is fine as well. And then I'm going to Spain, Celta Vigo, their odds against at home to Valencia. Valencia won their opening game last week at home to Levante, but their away record has been quite dismal last season. Only 3 wins from 19 games away from home, and they've lost a couple of big players in that squad. Rodri gone to Leeds, Pereo and Coquelin are gone to Villarreal, and Man City picked up Fernand Torres as well, and they haven't replaced those players. So it's tough to see how they can improve on that dismal away record. Celta Vigo, they underperformed again last season, just to avoid the drop for the second season running, but they have a much more capable squad than those results suggest. Going forward, they have Iago Aspas and Santi Mina up top, so I think they're good value for win at home odds against.
Thank you, chaps. Yeah, it's really worrying what's going on. Obviously, so many lower league clubs are really going to feel the pinch. And you do just wonder what the final League One and League Two tables are going to look like in terms of, you know, how many teams are actually still in existence. Fingers crossed we get crowds back in soon and they can prosper again. Right then, let's get the weekend naps.
Everything is better when it's bigger. Paddy Power's Same Game Multi allows you to combine a number of selections from a single match into one big bet. Check out the Same Game Multi tab and get building your bet. Terms and conditions apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
I'll start. I'm going to go Everton to beat West Brom without conceding. Everton to win 2-0 is 8-5 with Paddy Power, and I think that's a bloody brilliant price. Dan, what are you going to go for?
I'm going to go League One, Ipswich at 7-5 to win away to Bristol Rovers. They've already won at home to Bristol Rovers in the EFL Cup. They beat them 3-0, comfortable victory. They're looking good at the moment. They also beat Wigan. Wigan, and we know about their problems, but Ipswich dealt with them comfortably, beat them 2-0 in their first league game. They've got a key midfielder, Teddy Bishop, who's had terrible injury problems the last few years. He's fit and playing well at the moment. Really, he's a good enough midfielder to do well in the Championship, let alone League One. Freddie Sears has started scoring some goals, got two in the cup victory over Bristol Rovers. And Bristol Rovers, I'm quite negative on them this season. Last season, they only won two of their last 17 League One games. Since then, they've sold the top scorer, Johnson Clark Harris, to Peterborough. He got 13 of their 38 goals last season. They got an eye-catching result at Sunderland last week. They drew 1-1 at Sunderland, but they lost a shot count 25-5, goal out of Charm Life, and I don't think they'll be as lucky this weekend.
Who are you napping, Mark Langdon?
I'm going to play it quite safe, actually, Bruce, this week. I'm going to go for Borussia Dortmund to beat Borussia Mönchengladbach. It's a bit of a bogey team issue here. Dortmund won their last 11 against Gladbach. It's not necessarily a reason to back them in this game. But, of course, one of Dortmund's big problems down the years, not necessarily for their accounting, but just for the team quality, is that they usually sell their best players. But actually, if you have a look at it, they've kept hold of Sancho for the time being, Erling Haaland, who scored some amazing goals for Norway against Northern Ireland the other week. He's still leading the line. And the team's actually starting to look quite strong now with Chan and Hummels at the back. Meunier's come in from Paris Saint-Germain. Still got Witzel in midfield. Reina, they think, could be a star as well, son of Claudio. And Jude Bellingham in starting in the sort of number six role defensive midfield. It looks like he could have like a Sancho style kind of run at Dortmund, where maybe people felt he wasn't going to get games right from the start, but actually does.
I thought you were going to say Meunier coming from Huddersfield. Must be a different one.
Yeah, thankfully for Borussia Dortmund.
Mark, do you think Sancho will stay at Borussia, or do you think United will get him?
I feel like he'll stay because you know, Dortmund have said quite clearly that they want a certain amount of money. Manchester United haven't got there yet. So it doesn't make sense to sort of wait another month and then pay what Dortmund want for him. But I suppose Edward Wood did that with Harry Maguire. But I mean, it's quite an expensive deal. And if you've got full faith in Mason Greenwood, Martial and Rashford, maybe there are other areas United need to strengthen first. But I mean, it's not my money. If it was my money, then I wouldn't spend that money. But as it's not, I think United should buy.
Jolly good. Brian, who's your nap?
Yeah, I had Everton written down as well, so I'm happy that you've got them in. So we'll just go back to Carlisle, will be my second pick against Southend. Southend beaten 4-0 by Harrogate last weekend. Inexperienced squad, as we were saying earlier on. And it's been used as a test event as well. There's going to be 1,000 home supporters there for Carlisle as well, so they could cheer them across the line.
Well, fingers crossed that is the case, because they've just announced a lockdown in the northeast, and I know that Carlisle is actually northwest, but it's fairly close. So hopefully that will still go ahead. We've seen with racing that these pilot events have been cancelled at the very last minute. OK, just to recap then, the naps are Everton drawn, I bet, Ipswich, Borussia Dortmund and Carlisle. And hopefully, Brian, you can get a Racing Post postcast acca up on the Paddy Power site under football, under specials. Yes, my friend?
Yes, that'll be enhanced there later on today.
Excellent. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Mark. And thank you, Dan. Superb wisdom there. I hope you've enjoyed listening to what the guys have had to say. Thank you so much for joining us. We're back next week for another great football postcast. Have a brilliant weekend. And like I say, gamble safely, gamble responsibly.